From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Poprad, which should be in a geriatrics hospital this week. It's got to be said. Hi, I'm Eric Wiltshire at the base of the Tatry Mountains with Man Flu in the summer, the worst variety of all. But apparently my voice is good for voiceovers. My agent is ready. I will take fees for voiceovers very quickly while I've still got the voice I've got. Over in the zit of the nose of Europe, actually in a medical position, and strangely for this week, normally he's horizontal because of alcohol. Now it's horizontal because of a bad back, and he's genuinely laying on the floor during the programme. Lee Banks.
I am, and I have my microphone sticking up in the air.
Don't make me laugh, it hurts.
I'm sorry, I can't laugh either because it hurts me.
Oh, dear. And just released from, I'll say this carefully, just released from hospital, not other places, he wasn't in the, whatever it is in Paris, none other than Mark Gander.
Yes, hello there. I got out of hospital yesterday after 2 days in there getting my shoulder. I broke my collarbone 3 weeks ago and it should have been repaired. It was behaving very, very badly, and it's been now properly repaired with a piece of titanium and 7 screws, and I've got the radio to see it. So, hello, everybody.
I don't think you should be screwing anything while you've got a bad shoulder.
No.
It's the bionic man.
By the way, the word for Lee's horizontal is actually supine.
Oh, right, yes. Yes, very true.
Supine. Hey, someone
was
a pet.
Stop it, that's bovine. Where was we? A couple of obits to start this attempt at a programme off this week, which is going to be hysterical if we get to the end of this. Late last night, Lucian Freud, who's obviously descendant of the well-known Mr. Freud, according to reports, was one of the most distinguished and highly regarded artists in the UK. He's died at the age of 88. I would never speak ill of the dead, but I have to say his picture of the Queen look more like the Muppets.
It did. That was quite a controversial painting on his side, I must admit.
It was rubbish.
What did she think of it, by the way? Do we know?
No.
She was very, very equine about it.
Equine?
Equine.
Do you mean equable?
Equable is more the word. Equine's a horse.
I was just doing a follow-on to bovine.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah. Oh, don't make me laugh. She was quite sort of nice about it, and I don't think she was very impressed at all. And
effable.
Don't say the F word about the Queen. And he was a good artist. There's a lot of stuff he did, but I must admit the Queen painting perhaps was not one of his grandest efforts.
Well, I did have a look at some of his paintings. I can't find one that's worth more than a fiver.
That's because you're being a Philistine again. No. Some of his work is incredible. What, absolutely stunning, like the fat woman on the bed. We've all been in that position.
That was about as representative of a fat woman in a bed as I am.
You are like a fat woman in bed.
It's rubbish.
Well, it was very interesting that she was able to get that picture of the pregnant Jerry Hall. And, I mean, I think it's quite remarkable. And I thought that Jerry Hall was, you know, a great sport to do it. And I think it was very, very interesting. And the fat woman, I think, was what the benefits advisor on the bed. And I know it just... I don't think it was only about the woman itself. I think it was her whole occupation as a benefits advisor. And, you know, this is the other side of her reposing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. It's a beautiful little urban story told with an elegance and a style which is quite shocking, and that's what he was about. He was about shocking people into understanding different aspects of art and everything. I'll be back!
Yeah, talking of shocking people, we'll go on to item two, which I just thought was hysterical, not for the fact that Mr. Murdoch had a pie in his face this time last week, but for the fact that the British Parliament had to turn round and apologise to Mr. Rupert Murdoch for letting a protester come in and damage his suit. I mean, how ironic is that?
Well, it's also not that ironic when you think the same thing happened to Tony Blair.
It's outrageous.
It is. It's absolutely outrageous. Listen, while we're on about that, we'll go into... I just wanted to tell you something, because just by coincidence, I was talking to a CID bloke, right, from Manchester during the week. I was just having a general chat about it, because obviously we've got a vested interest in this. And it was just very simply that he said, this is not just the tip of the iceberg. This isn't revealing anything. The world would be amazed at what really goes on, and this is almost a whitewash.
Yeah, I'll bet it would be amazed too. I'll bet.
Well, there is another interesting thing as well. You notice that Cameron, although he's in trouble because of his involvement with the press, this week he's editing Big Issue. Do you know that's because he's going to be kicked out of his home soon?
No, what about Mr. Clegg then?
What's he doing?
Absolutely zero. That's the whole point.
I know he's keeping his head down.
Isn't he
very,
just?
Very much indeed. Yeah, well, I think
he doesn't
anybody...
need to keep it down. He keeps it up.
Stop it.
I did stop.
Yeah. But anyway, are you telling me then the Big Issue is owned by a news corporation as well? And that's why Cameron's
Oh, dear.
But I mean, it is getting gloomier and gloomier, isn't it? I mean, we now see that James Murdoch's evidence, which he gave to Parliament, is now being disputed by two of his former employees. I don't think we're very far away from Mr. Murdoch being arrested in order to answer questions. That doesn't mean that he's necessarily done anything, but I can imagine that may be a step that's coming.
Well, I agree with you. You know, it's the thing is, I know Colin Myler, like I know Neil Wallace. I work with Colin Myler on The Sun. And Colin Myler, I've got to stand up, and there's nothing wrong in saying this, was one of the most honest and straightforward journalists you'd ever meet. And in fact, if he did what he said he did, which I'm sure, you know, there's got to be something there in what he said he's done, then what a good, fine, upstanding man he is.
I'll tell you, you're going to both shout at me for this.
I can't. It'll hurt me back.
It'll hold my shoulder.
Don't make me laugh. It hurts. the truth is, when you looked at those MPs asking questions of the Murdochs, it was like a 25-year-old shop manager being interviewed by a 2-year-old kid. Yeah. They had no idea what they were talking about. A lot of the people that are wittering on about how things work in big business have never worked there in the first place, have no idea what goes on whatsoever. And to be honest, most of the whinging that's going on at the moment is just jealousy or the unknown who never will know. And I don't understand why we can't let go of it.
Well, I thought that they were quite well prepared, really. But I mean, the thing is, I think that when we, particularly, I think in Britain, you know, when we see questioning, when we hear about questioning like that, we immediately think it's going to be a kind of sort of courtroom scene with a cross-examining QC, and it's going to be really vicious. And Parliament doesn't do that kind of thing. So I think that maybe that's why there's a sense of disappointment. And of course, it would be very nice to see these people seriously put under pressure and seriously pressed. But of course, even if the only thing that Select Committee inquiry has produced is a contradiction between James Murdoch and his ex-employee, which of course will be then subject to police investigation, even if that has come out of it, I think that makes it worthwhile.
Well, I would say if ever you're going to go and speak in front of some very difficult people, get a copy, it's still available on the Parliament website, of the interview with Mr. Rupert Murdoch, because that is the past master of how not to get under pressure, how to think about it, how to take up loads of time, and the people asking the questions deserved what they got, because they were saying, is the sky blue? Mr. Murdoch pauses for a while, thinks about it, looks up and says, yes. Because that's all that questions were demanding.
I think he came across really as a bit of an old man. I think it was quite surprising to say things like, you know, he was out of contact with things and so forth. I'm sure that that's not the kind of approach that he would have used even just 10 years ago. And certainly when he was a younger man, he would have never said that kind of thing.
Yeah, the thing is, you've got to accept, and this is something that everybody really who's studies the media knows, that actually, with the greatest respect to Rupert Murdoch, he isn't the most articulate person in the world. He's a good businessman, and I don't think for a second that, like certain people have said, that he's losing his marbles by dint of age at all. No. He's not very articulate, and he's quite ponderous. And like Eric says, what he was doing, he was answering asinine questions.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the simple fact is, the reason they were asking these asinine questions was very simply because, actually, now this whole thing is focused in the totally wrong direction. It should be looking more and more at the police and the politicians.
Mm. You've been there before, haven't you? I think we'll move on.
just before we do, can I just do something in our Real God and Kids section? What you forgot?
Oh, yes.
Just dead sad, dead sad. US songwriter Jerry Ragavoy. He's the one who wrote Peace of My Heart. Fight for Janis Joplin, wrote Elvis Presley's songs, wrote the Stones songs. He's died
really?
As well.
Oh, yeah.
I really believe, unbelievable, when you think that these blokes wrote these incredible hit records that are still in the charts now, and he died at the age of 80.
Oh, well, had a good running. Good innings, as they say. Good stuff. Talking of, I don't know about good innings. I think they're having a marvellous innings, to be quite honest. Greece and the debt bailout, which I was about to get Mark to talk about in more depth.
You're not, because he's poorly.
Because he's poorly, yes. No, because it would have caused absolute chaos if Greek had totally defaulted. This just seems to be a story whereby they're allowed to default, but they're not really. Ho-hum. And one of the things that's been coming out of it is so many journalists rattling on about how bad it is when you go into the Eurozone from the pound zone. And I'm a bit bemused by that, Mark.
Who is it who's saying that how bad it is?
He's just accused journalists.
I have.
Oh, sorry, was it journalists?
Yes.
Well,
you have to listen to it when you do the show.
Stop it.
Well, I certainly find a lot of people comparing France with England and saying how cheap France is, how inexpensive England is, and I have to say I can't see that at all. I just wonder whether it isn't maybe just, you know, British journalists want to knock Britain. I really don't see. I have to say that, you know, on the matter of the Greek debt deal, I mean, it seems to me that obviously they're trying to make progress. But, you know, the real battle seems to be against these credit scoring agencies, because if it seems to me that all the pressure there is to prevent Greece's debt being downgraded any further. Because, of course, that, you know, that will lead to the enormous problems. And it seems to me that actually they probably should be downgraded, but it's a bit of a cosmetic job, a bit of a makeup job to make it look better than it is.
Could you just, for the likes of idiots like me, because I'll tell you what's flashing through my brain at the moment, Mark.
If you're suggesting I'm an international finance expert, I'm really not.
No, but you see, this is where I've got a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
These agencies, they're not government bodies, are they?
They're not. Well, you mean the credit reference agencies? No, I don't think they are. And I have to say, I think that, you know, they're a bit of an exclusive club that raves themselves into a position of dominance. And basically, you know, they're consultancies. They're comprised of probably, you know, very, very powerful intellects, economic intellects and so forth.
Yeah.
Who basically take a view on the economic status of the various members of the Eurozone community. They're not government, and to that extent, they're independent, and to that extent, of course, they should be listened to. But the trouble is that they're so powerful in what they say, they're capable of doing a lot of damage simply by really sort of striking down the efforts of governments to rescue a situation.
So they're a private bunch of folk who have a tremendous amount of power.
Yes. They're think tanks, really.
Who are not controlled by governments. I wonder if they should be in the next parliamentary committee meeting then.
Interesting point.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because this is the whole thing with this stuff. I've always struggled with who's the boss here. Now, if you're lending somebody money, you're perfectly entitled to put some caveats around it and say, you will not go out on the razzle-dazzle while you're paying the money back. Fair enough. But when you've got these quasi-quangos that are built up around the world, who seem to be old-school Thai clubs, probably based in the Bahamas or somewhere, who seem to be like the puppeteers above the Greeks and things like that. That's where I have some slight sympathy for the Greeks. I've also got to say that the Greeks in the way that they run their country, have run it into the ground. That's a fact of life. But there's this oddball bit outside which makes me really freak out, because who are these people?
Strange. It is a very good question. I'll tell you what, something else that just struck me about this. And where? How does George Osborne, right, our Chancellor, right, England's Chancellor, Great Britain's Chancellor, has welcomed the new bailout package, saying that it's a decisive economic action. What I want to ask is, what authority has he got to say that by?
Well, he's an accountant, isn't he?
Yeah, but you know what else he said in the same breath? We have to remember that Great Britain is not an island economy. I think we are.
I think you're not.
Think we are.
I think you're not.
Island, and we have an economy, and we have this overblown attitude where we think we're in up there with the big players. We are, of course, we've even still got our own currency. We are an island economy, and once we start looking at the fact we're an island economy and stop giving all our money away to everybody who's got any problems anywhere else in the EU, right, then we might be doing all right. Going back to what Mark was saying, the simple fact is, Mark, in Britain, we are paying £7 a gallon for petrol and nearly £2 for a loaf of bread. That's how bad things are here. And we've got a Chancellor who said, oh, we're not an island economy, let's give all the money we haven't got away.
I think being an island economy or not is more than just whether you're not giving your money away. But, I mean, you know, the fact is that we rely a huge amount on international trade.
Yeah. I mean, taking your point, Lee, then America's an island.
Of course it is. And once island economies start looking after themselves instead of trying to look after everybody else, when everybody's on the verge of collapse, then we will rebuild the strength of the world economy.
I'm not sure that it works like
I'm
that.
I'm not sure you'd... Because the cost of the damage that would be done by others... I mean, to put this into political context a little bit, when the new Labour Party were pouring money into the UK economy to refloat it, a lot of people were chastising them for doing it. And I was sitting there going, nope, good idea, lads, I like this. Yeah. But there was a point where George Osborne from the Conservative Party comes in and says, no, you've had enough now you've got to stand up on your own two feet. And that's no different, and I'll draw another synergy for you. You know, you go into hospital, have an operation, like poor Mark's done. If you lose lots of blood, they put some blood back into you, but then it's up to your body to carry on generating the new next lot of blood. That's the same with economies.
That's basically what I'm saying.
Hey?
But you didn't.
Or anything like that.
I didn't say I was saying that in the past. In the last 30 seconds, I said that's what I'm saying now.
All right.
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 Anyway, I think we are an island economy, and it's a simple fact. It's dead simple, isn't it? If, like, say, you know, I've got neighbours here. Say we pulled our money to do something, right? And it didn't work out. We've all lost. If we did it separately and then sorted things out, and we looked after ourselves first, then we wouldn't lose, is all I'm saying.
Right. I think the level of economy that would create would be a bit of a disaster.
Well, the economy we've got now is a disaster. Economics in the world are not working.
Nah.
The whole of the world is on the verge of collapse because we have an archaic system of paying for things and making money. And all I'm saying is that at this stage in our development as a world, right, we should be looking at other ways of financing things, of making things work.
What you mean, like barter?
Anything at all that will look. There are people who are looking at different kinds of economy.
Right. But what I don't get, perhaps it's me. In fact, I'm sure it's me. What I don't understand is, where does this all sort of come from? Where does this economy, this miracle economy, come from that's going to redrive the wealth of the world to enable everything to come back round? The problem is that you've got to pump so much money into the world to enable it to kickstart itself.
Listen, I think we're talking about other ways of...
Oops, we've lost the connection, boys and girls. Sorry about that. Hang on, I'll just click a little bit here and click a little bit there, and we should have them back in a second. This is Postcard from Pop Red, with me, Eric Wilch, with a really bad throat. And I've forgotten to do something, actually, before we move on to the next topic, which
I'm
is...
here.
I know, which is Microsoft. I haven't said hello to the nice people at Talk Radio X, Replay Radio, and equally to RTI and Audio Boo as well, which I should have done. So my apologies all ways round. Very quickly, as we come towards the end of part one, Microsoft have reported record revenues. $43.4 billion thanks to sales of Office software, which is like your Word and your stuff like that, and the Xbox 360. Any comments?
Well, that's a spectacular amount of money, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal amount of money. And really, when you think, it's that is world domination for you, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, it's doing them all right. But I mean, what I have to say, the Office software, I mean, how much longer is it going to be around? Well, I understand that everything's now moving up into the cloud, if you like, where you don't have to have copies of this software on your computer. You know. So, I mean, I hope that they're not just counting everything on these particular products, and I'm sure they're not. I mean, they're not naive. I've now got to move on to something I forgot to put in.
This is going to be preempted with a bit of help from Mark, I hope, because I mentioned this on my Facebook account that I would talk about this subject, to which I said I'd probably need some Valium after I did it. Because of Lee, to which one of our listeners just went, ha, 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 I can't wait for to hear this.
Right. Can we have some Valium before you do it, please?
No, I think we might need it because Lee will go, you know, off into one. As we've mentioned several times, and somebody asked me for a quick review of it, here we go. Google Plus.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Google Plus, yeah. Google Plus. Have we tried it yet?
No, tried to get on it because I wanted to try and establish our name before somebody else nicked our name, but I couldn't make head nor tail of it.
Right.
Well, they've got the name Mark Gardner.
Well, I'll tell you, you cannot imagine the amount of trouble that I've had and also the Consumer Action Group has had with their various names being occupied, we'll say politely, on things like Facebook, Twitter, in terms of domains. It's an ongoing problem. I don't know who it is.
It's called brand protection in cyberspace.
I think it's a bit more vicious than that.
Yeah. Let me just sort of... I'll get you an invite into Google+. That's not a problem. But what I'll also say to you is the fan pages, like the fan pages on Facebook, are now not liable to become available until December. So the mad panic for registering names could well be in December.
Right.
So if you are, and Google have done this before, they did it with Gmail, and it made me flipping cross at the time, where they create this illusion of bringing users on because it's an exclusive club. No, it's not. It's so they don't overload everything. They want to play and test at the same time as bringing people on to see what goes wrong. They're not have too many people who moan about it so it doesn't become a headline. It's simple. Microsoft do it, Google do it, they all do it.
Yeah.
And
why am I going to go mad about this?
Well, because we thought that technology and you didn't work.
Well, technology and me don't work. That's because technology is rubbish. But I can't really get annoyed about this very much. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Okay.
I've been looking at this cloud thing, you know.
Have you?
I don't understand it.
which does sort of fit in with the cloud technology. Because the theory is that you'll just have a little kind of thing you can walk around with no memory. Connect to a Wi-Fi.
That's North Andrea.
Yeah, connect to a Wi-Fi hotspot and get all your stuff. Fundamental flaw number one.
What?
There's not enough Wi-Fi hotspots.
How is that what it's all about?
Of course. Because you've got to have access to the internet if you want to do cloud computing. Yeah. And if you haven't got any access to the internet, the little tablet computer that you walk around with that fits in your pocket because it's not got anything on it is about as useful as a doorstop.
Yeah. Well, I went somewhere last Wednesday, and I was sitting in somebody's house, and we thought we'd be able to get my computer attached to their thing, their internet thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was impossible. We could not make a connection. We went through all the things that you should do, and it wouldn't work. And it wasn't me. This bloke's quite an intelligent bloke, and he couldn't make it work.
Oh, my word. But anyway, back to Google Plus. So Google what you do is you have these circles, right?
Circles.
You have circles. You can have circles of friends, circles of work colleagues. I know, it just bemuses me.
And you don't want to do with all Welshmen and Paul Jones.
Yes, that's right. there is one thing that we found on this, which I'm not sure about, but I'm going to warn you about it. Because I was testing it with some colleagues in the day job, and we found out that when you log off like you do with Facebook and other things, it can clean out of your computer. We found out that under certain circumstances, we thought we were talking to X person. We were actually talking to Y person who was logged on as X. In other words, it wasn't distinguishing between the two at the time. Now, whether that's just
very dangerous,
whether that's just a little glitch as it was starting up or whatever, that was odd. And the other thing that I found was very, very odd. And this was and I'll have to put it into the context of how we did it. We were using Firefox as one of the test browsers at this moment. Yeah. We closed Firefox down. We then got an email from Google Plus saying somebody had passed a comment. When we clicked back on, we didn't have to log on again.
Oh, really?
Right, which in my book is very dangerous because...
Well, yeah, you could be in a computer store somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, Mr. Google, if that's been fixed, please tell me because I'll be much happier. But those were some of the little quirkies we found. Now, it does have a thing like Skype in it. Very true.
Yeah.
It's about as clunky as Fred Flintstone's car.
Well, that was quite smooth, wasn't it?
He had a
Mondeo. Oh, did he?
Yeah, and it's very confusing how it comes up if you're a Skype user or anything else.
Yeah.
But it's just the whole thing has got a complete terminology and thought process of its own. And I think it's great while there's two or three of you playing on it, but I think if you got to hundreds of people into your circle of friends or workmates, it would just be a nightmare. The third and really fundamental problem is, like MySpace in the early days of MySpace, there's nobody else involved in it. What do people go to Facebook for? To meet their friends and play games,
Yeah.
Is that fair enough?
Yeah.
They
have to build up their critical mass, don't they? I mean,
there's no games on Google Plus.
No. I mean, do you think they're going to start launching them or pushing them on? I mean, they're going to have to do something.
Well, they must
have this stuff in mind, surely.
I hope so, because if not, I mean, it's got a lovely way you can embed videos in it. But in all truth, Mr. Google, Facebook is not a business tool. It's a consumer tool that you send business to and from.
Yeah.
Google Plus at the moment is a competitor for LinkedIn and nothing else. On that happy note, we'll take a little break at the end of part one. We're back in part two of Postcard from Portbread.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.